Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. And as always, we have an episode about the intersection of sports and business. And this week, we're going to be talking about something that's in the news a lot recently, and that is sports gambling in the United States, because the Supreme Court is just heard a case last week, New Jersey versus NCAA. It's Christie versus NCAA, and that could basically change the face of sports betting in the United States, because currently it's illegal. Not a lot of people know that. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we get into all that, I want to welcome a guest I have on today. It's my coworker, Ryan McQueenie.
Hello. Yes. If you listen to other Zacks podcasts, you're probably familiar with my voice already, but it's nice to be on this show. First time joining Full Court Finance, so I'm happy to be here, especially with the topic that we're talking about today.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic because it's something that I'm not as familiar with, but you don't really think of sports gambling being illegal in the United States because it seems like it's everywhere. ESPN has lines. I mean, Scott Van Pelt's Sports Center every night has bad beats.
Yeah.
It just seems strange that it's illegal, but it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely a part of the terminology, and the words that we use and associate with gambling are definitely in every American sports fan's lexicon. And, you know, I would think the vast majority of serious sports fans either participate in wagering or are aware of the industry. But yeah, as you pointed out, it's like not necessarily legal everywhere that you live. And much of gambling is kind of still in that either legal gray area or in the full black market. Call in bets to your bookie who runs a thing out of his apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends who since undergrad have had their own bookies. They do this, and it seems crazy, but not a lot of people ever get really in trouble for this, especially the people on the actual betting side. Like maybe if you run a big underground sports book in the States, you can get in trouble. But the ranges of how much money is being spent on illegal sports gambling in the States, the American Gambling Association says it's about $150 billion a year that's on sports betting in the States. But then in Adam Silver's now like famous New York Times op-ed about how the state should legalize sports betting, he's the commissioner of the NBA, by the way, he estimates that it's like $400 billion, which is an insane amount of money.
That's the interesting thing about things that operate in the black market, is we never really know how much money is going around, because if we did, then it wouldn't really be much of a black market. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's what's crazy, is that there's hundreds of billions of dollars floating around. It's going offshores. It's going to online sports books all over Europe and Asia and South America. And it seems like, why is it like that?
Yeah, well, one of the key that immediately leads to people who are pro gambling legalization, I think their primary argument is an argument that we see in all sorts of legalization movements, whether it be the marijuana legalization movement or whatever else have you, is that why don't we just take these black markets and legalize the activity that's going on, bring in government regulation, and then tax it. So we're generating new revenue for states and local governments, and then we're also making sure that the activities are being conducted up to a certain standard. So that part of it makes sense, and seems like with this case, we could be kind of on the cusp.
Yeah. So before we get into the Supreme Court case, which I want to dive into in depth, I want to talk about sort of the only place in the States where you can bet on sports. And that is basically the state of Nevada, Vegas, the mecca of gambling in the United States. It's been like that for a long time. What does the sports betting scene look like in Vegas?
So the one of the main attractions that you're going to have in any sort of Vegas casino is the sports book or the sports and race book. It's going to be a section of the casino that is almost kind of cornered off doing its own thing, with just dozens of screens and dozens of boards displaying current lines of games and odds of games and races, and seating for people, and then up in the front areas to place your bets with cashiers. So You walk in, you have all of the latest odds and lines on games, and then all of those games available to watch. And you walk up and place your bets. It's typically a cash-only transaction. And you get your ticket right there at the cashier's booth, and you watch your game, and you hope it plays out. The casinos themselves employ the odds makers who set the lines on the games and who create the odds. And so those people aren't necessarily out in the forefront, but they're certainly doing their work. And that's part of the experience too, is that odds and lines are constantly changing based off of everything from weather conditions that are affecting the games being played to injuries, roster updates, all the way down to just what are the bets coming in, and if you're a casino, how can we, motivate people to start betting on the game. So when you look at lines and odds, a lot of it is also related to the amount of activity that has been that a game has seen thus far. So
yeah, and I mean, and that's what I think, if you're not a sports gambler or a sports bettor or paying a lot of attention to sports, you sometimes wonder, like, why are there weekly injury updates of these players? And why do people care so much about if this guy gets hurt on Thursday at practice? And it's not for the casual fan. It's a lot of for sports gamblers.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. Why is anyone interested in the Cleveland Browns games every week outside of Browns fans, who I don't even think Browns fans are super interested in it, but you've got winless football teams who, you're going to have people sitting there watching every second of that game every week because they've got money on it. So off the top of my head, I knew also of like the first 6 weeks of the seasons, even though they didn't win a game, the Browns were like undefeated against the spread, which means they're going to attract even more attention to those games.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and that's why it sometimes seems hypocritical of Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, to be so relatively at this point anti-sports betting, when he must know that gambling and fantasy sports is driving a majority of the business of the NFL on a weekly basis. Sure. Especially when, like you said, the Browns are terrible. Half the league has no shot from opening
at this point,
like the opening of the season, yeah, often, like
at this point, like only half of the teams are really in the playoff mix, exactly, in the NFL. But yeah, to touch on that point specifically, first of all, I got to get a jab in here. Roger Goodell being a hypocrite about something isn't exactly breaking news alert, but the side that you have to see from a guy like that, who is employed by the owners of the league, and that's really who he works for and who he's responsible to hold the best interests of. The owners of the teams aren't necessarily benefiting from sports gambling at all. In fact, to them, they're probably a little bit annoyed with the fact that there's this industry related to their product that they're not benefiting from. If I know anything about rich men who own sports teams, it's that they care a lot about their money. So yeah, on that side of things, where is the cut? Where is the benefit to the NFL? Where is their cut coming from? And then the other side of things too is that gambling in America especially is still viewed as a sin. And so you have this whole aspect of it where conservative, traditional family values, especially American traditional conservative values, the gambling is frowned upon. And so it's one thing to be okay with legalized gambling, and it's another thing if you're the face of the NFL to come out and be a staunch supporter of getting regulation changed, because then you're basically co-signing gambling as an activity, which, there are so many family fans that are just young families and they have kids and they don't want to be supporting a league that is very publicly pro-gambling. And that's also a simple truth. No matter how you break it down, there's just a lot of people who think of gambling as an immoral activity.
Yeah, I mean, it comes to that phrase of it's just moral decay, and if we have legalized sports gambling, it'll just create more so-called degenerate gamblers who are spending money they don't have on games they know nothing about every night of the week, and that could be bad. Who knows? Maybe if this New Jersey case passes, or if they win, it could create this sort of downward spiral of just a crazy amount of gambling in the United States. And that brings us, though, that brings us now to the actual case itself.
Okay.
So
good.
On Monday,
we should get the legal
basis. Yeah, exactly. So on Monday, December 4th, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Christie versus the National Collegiate Athletic Association. So that's the NCAA. A ruling on the case is expected to determine the constitutionality of the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992. So that's PASPA. You're probably going to hear that a lot in the next couple of months before the verdict comes down. That's PASPA. That was an act in 1992 that basically prohibits sports betting outside of Nevada and a handful of other places. But those states are mostly, I think it's just like horse betting that you can do. So there's basically, since 1992, you haven't been able to technically gamble on any sports in America. New Jersey's been upset about that. Atlantic City, they say, has been hurt by that. And since 2012, they've poured millions of dollars into trying to fight this case. They've gotten overruled at all of the lower courts, and now the Supreme Court has finally decided to take this case. So they need 4 out of the 9 judges to decide to take a case. They only take about 1% of cases a year. So people are starting to think, like, they must be taking this case for some reason. And maybe they're taking it for this moral higher ground, and we're going to say, now there's definitely no gambling at all in the United States. We're going to come down hard in New Jersey here. But that's not what a lot of people are thinking. Most people are thinking, legal experts, everyone, that they're probably going to rule in New Jersey's favor.
Serious chance that this ends up with a basic reversal of the PASPA law that you mentioned. And I want to note also, before we move on from the cases, that it's Christie versus the NCAA, and we've mentioned that New Jersey is a big factor here. We're talking about outgoing New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. So that's
correct.
A familiar name to some of you. Chris Christie, the infamous New Jersey governor, he, on behalf of his state, really brought this case in an attempt to overturn the PASPA law. And as you mentioned, it's big for New Jersey because Atlantic City is probably Vegas Junior in the United States. There's a couple other gambling hotspots here and there in Mississippi and other places, but Atlantic City, I would say, is like the second largest gambling hub. And basing off the idea that sports gambling would add kind of another layer of activity there.
Yeah, and it's going to be Chris Christie's last sort of big hurrah as New Jersey governor. I mean, it could end up being a really great thing for the state, though. I mean,
sure.
Atlantic City, if it wins, could benefit a lot. There's going to be sports books that pop up 2 seconds after it gets passed, if it gets passed. And that brings us to who really stands to benefit if it is passed. Like, if the Supreme Court rules that PASPA is unlawful and sports betting comes back to New Jersey, like, who benefits?
Yeah, so let's kind of run it through a few of the entities that are involved in legal gambling right now, and maybe we can kind of land on an answer to that question. From the Vegas side of things, and obviously these companies that I'm about to mention have operations outside of Vegas, but these are the kind of kings of the strip that are publicly traded companies. MGM, Wynn, Las Vegas Sands, and Caesars Entertainment. So those are companies that are going to have kind of that monopoly on the Las Vegas casino-based gambling, where sports gambling is allowed. Other people that are going to, are the names that you might hear mentioned in the same conversation, are British-based sports book companies. As you mentioned, sports gambling is legal there. In the UK, is not uncommon to, on an average street in a major city, see a walk-in betting shop for sports betting. Some of the companies involved in that are going to be William Hill, Paddy Power, Betfair, and Ladbrokes. Those are names that you're not really going to see a ton of U.S.-based activity from right now. I know off the top of my head that William Hill does have William Hill-branded sports books in Vegas casinos. In some of the smaller casinos that don't have their own sports books, William Hill has like third-party sports book in their properties. And I know that Paddy Power, Betfair does similar things on a limited scale in the U.S. I'm not 100% sure if Ladbrokes does, but to touch on the question that you asked, you would think that these British sportsbook players would be interested in U.S. expansion. Typically, these people phrase it in a way of always interested in expanding as regulatory environments change. And you would think they have the resources and expertise to expand into the United States relatively quickly. Other people at play would be companies like Churchill Downs, which is a name we'll recognize for because it's a pretty noteworthy horse racing track. But the company itself operates as a publicly traded entity that not only owns the horse track, but also several off-track betting facilities throughout the United States, as well as an online betting platform. So a company like that is definitely going to be interested in expanding its off-track betting facilities into full-on sports books. And then the other people that stand to benefit are going to be your kind of local casino players, like in Atlantic City, who are going to be able to add the sports book to their facilities. If I had to make a guess, though, I would think the aforementioned casino giants, the MGM, Wynn, Las Vegas Sands, Caesars, would be willing to and interested in relatively quickly establishing their own sportsbook facilities in other states outside of Nevada. And again, something that makes sense based on what they're already doing and something that you would think that these companies have the cash to pull off relatively quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. In like going off of the example like you brought up about the UK and how it's legal there, I mean, it's sort of how the United States could model their statewide sports betting. I mean, since the early 60s, it's been completely legal in the United Kingdom to bet on sports. At this point now, I was looking at this last night. I was going through all of the 20 English Premier League teams, and I think I counted that 9 out of the 20 teams in one of the biggest soccer leagues in the world are now currently, their jersey sponsor is an online betting company. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest league in the world.
Yeah.
Imagine if an NFL team just had Doff Bet across their jersey. I mean, that's how ingrained it is in their culture. And I can't say that it has no negative effects, but it's there. It's completely legal. And that is what a lot of people in the States are hoping happens eventually here. That also then brings me to a question of like, what are some of the concerns on the sports league side? Like, why would Major League Baseball be worried? Why would the NBA be worried? Like, are they worried about match fixing? Because it kind of seems like you have that in low-level tennis. Like, it's been a problem where a guy who's ranked 600th in the world, who's actually probably losing money every year because he has to pay for all of his travel, can have a guy approach him and say, hey, you lose the first set, we'll give you this. You miss, you double fault here, we'll give you that. Like, that's been a problem in tennis. But it would be really hard for an NBA player who's making $5 million a year to then somehow want to like shave points. Because if you got caught, the repercussions would be so not worth it. And
sure.
Like at this point, I mean, like if that was going to happen, it would already be happening because these big wig guys who are running this illegal, basically $100 billion a year industry would be the ones who have the influence, not like the casual sports better.
Yeah. So that type of activity is obviously would remain illegal. So intentionally fixing games would be something that would be, you would be held accountable to regulatory standards, which is kind of an argument again for legalization, is that having more regulatory bodies in would be able to govern those types of things a little bit better. But I would say the first counter argument that pops up from what you just said is that it likely is happening on a wider scale than we're aware of now, and we can confirm that it has happened in several noteworthy instances in the past. The NBA, probably most recently within the, you know, I don't know if it seems like it was more than 10 years ago now, but had a very public scandal with a referee coming out and saying, I was gambling on sports. I was gambling on games I was refereeing. Other referees were in on it too. We were fixing things, calling fouls here and there. here's everything I know about it. He went to jail. There was sentences.
Yeah, it's Tim Donaghy or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, which I think shows how long ago it was that we can't remember the name. But and even going back to the early 1900s, the MLB had a very notable match-fixing scandal with the Black Sox. Names like Pete Rose are still talked about with simply not because of his greatness in baseball, because he may or may not have gambled on baseball while he was playing. So these things do come up, and I think that a lot of people who would be against legalization of sports gambling would say that one of their top concerns would be bringing more attention to gambling would increase the likelihood that we would see match fixing issues. Because it can be as simple. I mean, you can live bet these games, and you can live bet free throws. You can live bet who's going to score first, or, you know, and if you're an irrelevant basketball team, if you're like if they start putting lines on like D-League basketball games,
yeah,
and you're making $50,000 a year, and you get approached by an operation that wants to just live bet who's scoring first, you know, that is an issue. And it has, as you pointed out, in tennis has been an issue on low levels. And that's probably where it would be a problem, is irrelevant games and lower leagues or less paid attention to leagues where we know less about it. So the outcomes are a lot less obvious to us, and potential fixing is a lot less obvious.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would be harder for the Golden State Warriors in the first game of the NBA Finals to somehow like have some funny things going on. But yeah, like you said, the NBA G League, the developmental league that no one's ever watching. Yeah. Those are easy things that maybe no one would notice if you just keep passing the same guy the ball until you score the first basket, something like that.
This probably shows a little bit too much of my own personal opinion on the situation, but I think that concern is... Yeah, I think you touched on it too, which is like, that's something we're going to have to be concerned about regardless of whether it's legalized. And I would hope that bringing more regulatory attention to the two sports would mean that we'd actually weed some of that out if it does exist.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what Adam Silver is talking about. He's actually, he has not come out in favor of the New Jersey case at all. They don't want to be tied to that, like, in writing. But in his expose and what he's talked about publicly is that he's in favor of a federal national regulation of sports gambling that then would have systems in place to watch over all of these things that people would be concerned about and have regulations. And you would look at lines that may be changed in a funny way. And just, you have all this technology now to where you can see if things are being betted on strangely or something's moving around. And that's what he wants, because he knows people are gambling on the leagues anyways. He knows it's a big reason people watch a lot of sports, especially if you have no rooting interest in a team. If you live in there's a lot of people all around the United States that don't live in a city that has a big college team or a pro team. So like, it's hard to have an allegiance. Gambling helps fuel these leagues. Silver wants something like that. And as we slowly wrap this up, I want to talk about how sort of companies you wouldn't think of being involved in sports betting could stand to benefit if the United States, if it's legalized nationally, would be the biggest sports gambling market in the world. And it's these tech companies, the Googles, the Facebooks of the world, that really could stand to get all in on sports betting, because it's going online. That's where a lot of the illegal sports betting is happening now anyways. It's the easiest way. You don't have to go to a sports book. You don't have to leave your house. You can just live bet these games. You can bet on anything just from your cell phone or an app, all of that. And since we have the host of Tech Talk Tuesdays with us, I was hoping you could just sort of talk about how a company like a Facebook or a Microsoft or a Sony or somebody like that who has patents on these kind of things, like how do they get involved in sports betting?
Yeah, well, so it would be relatively easy for anyone with any sort of e-commerce marketplace experience to set up some sort of platform, because you're talking about, from like a data security standpoint, you're talking about credit cards and personal information. So it's similar to what you would have on any sort of website where you're making a financial transaction. Then for those companies that have the name recognition and the money and the people, like fans, basically followers of the company, it seems like it would be relatively easy financial decision. I will say that, again, you have to go back to the morality aspect of it. We know that Facebook is willing to try basically anything to not only inspire more user growth, but also to make more money from the users that it does have. However, even in one of the most notable examples that we've seen them try out recently, which is this what we're going to see even more of in 2018, is original content, original TV shows on Facebook. We know that they had very strict guidelines for content producers who are pitching them shows about what they would want and what they don't want on the platform. And so just talking about Facebook specifically, we saw them say like no drugs, no sex, no swearing, like things that could go on TV. So to me, that means, that probably says like, would Facebook want to get involved in sports gambling? Probably not. But we do know that Facebook and Twitter and other social media platforms have really embraced the fact that sports fans are on these platforms while they're watching these games. And, you know, could, you know, the legalization of sports gambling add another element to that? It certainly adds more to the conversation when you're watching a regular game. So I don't know how it would, I don't necessarily know how it would play out. I would say from day one of legality, you should expect a plethora of options on your desktops, on your mobile phones. You are going to see plenty, and we're going to get the verdict in a few months, and then I'm sure it'll be a feeling out process for when a sports gambling website could go live with all the regulations that have to fall into place as well. But as soon as that number one, that first day of availability happens, expect a lot of different brands and a lot of different options on your phones and your webs and your laptops and whatever. How many of those will be from big name tech companies, I have no idea. But I would say, you know, the William Hill, Ladbrokes, Paddy Power, people that are sponsoring shirts on soccer teams in England, like those are names that are going to become much more familiar to American sports fans as soon as this type of thing goes through.
Yeah, I mean, if this goes through, you could start having startups, like you could have betting online app startups that mm-hmm. get big. I mean, the future is online. You have like MGM knows that the future of sports betting outside of Vegas, unless you're in these casinos, it's all online anyways. I mean, everything is going online, so that's where it's going to be. These platforms that already have a big user base, you could spin something off and just have a solely sports gambling app that isn't affiliated with you necessarily, but you own it, something like that. That's where I would see it going relatively quickly. I mean, if you have the user base, if you have all of this information, especially if you already have their credit cards or their bank accounts linked, the user already knows it's secure on their end, say something like Venmo or something like
it is.
Or theoretically it's well, now it seems like nothing is safe from hacking, but that's kind of where it's going in general. It's going online, and it's probably in the next 5 or 10 years going to be legally online throughout the United States. That's where it seems like this case is going.
Well, I think this topic too brings up a really important point of, and you mentioned you're going to see startups pop out of the woodwork of online apps and whatnot that you can gamble on. That would be my big question for the tech industry is, what is the revolutionary technology? What is the industry-shaking technology? And we've had such a trend of these traditional industries be rattled by really revolutionary, game-changing technologies over the past few years. What can we do to the sports gambling industry to make it more user-friendly or more interesting or more engaging? And when will that idea crop up once it is legalized? Because of course you're not going to see a ton of innovation in an industry that's operating in a weird legal gray area. But as soon as there's legality, regulation, and then money pouring in, you're going to see a lot of new interesting things happen from the technology side of things. So that'll be interesting to watch for sure.
Yeah, and there's already companies that are not based in the United States that are affiliated with even the big professional leagues in the States. The NFL, the NBA, the NHL have separate deals with Sports Radar, and they're not a betting company per se. They provide metrics and data analytics and player analytics and all of the numbers that anyone would ever want to know about any sports and player activity and scoring and all of that. It's a Switzerland-based company. They also own Bet Radar, and they play a big role in providing the information that these betting companies then use. So those are kind of companies that could then start popping up in the States. Major League Baseball has a partnership with Genius Sports that sort of does that same kind of thing. And that's a London-based company that gives a lot of the gamblers information to that's how a lot of the lines are created, basically. How they know, it seemingly know sort of what the score is going to be without, like, you're thinking, how do these guys know this? Like, how? Because they know every single minute piece of data you could possibly want to know about all of the things that are always happening every game.
And you would think legalization would only make that part of it even more efficient, so.
Yeah, yeah, and which would just encourage more and more betting, because if you get the lines tighter and tighter and tighter, and just, it's, you never know every time. And I think we've sort of talked about all we can at this point before the verdict's handed down. It's expected to come around sometime spring 2018. And like I mentioned before, it seems like momentum is heading in New Jersey's direction in this case, that most legal experts think the Supreme Court's going to rule in their favor and that sports betting will go statewide in New Jersey. As soon as the verdict's handed down, you have the CEO of the American Gaming Association basically coming out right after oral arguments on December 4th saying, basically, this is a done deal. Like, this is going to pass. This is going to be awesome. This is going to set up just more states to start doing this. You have states like Connecticut and I think it's Mississippi and other states, like, they're going to line up right after this is done to start doing this.
Important thing to note, too, is if the law gets overturned, it'll then be up to the states to legalize on a case-by-case basis, and it'll be a state-by-state regulated thing where everyone will have their own gaming commissions. And so that part of it could take time to play out. So it's not like we're going to get the ruling in the spring and the next day it'll be gambling everywhere.
You don't have to worry about that. Yeah, because, yeah, it's like you said, it's going to be a case-by-case basis. They're basically, the Supreme Court's going to rule and say that this law that mandated states not to have it is illegal, and then you, specific state, state X, you get to decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be all 50 states all at once. There's definitely going to be holdouts. There might be holdouts forever. There might be states that never pass sports gambling laws whatsoever. But if New Jersey passes, there are certainly states lined up and ready and willing to bring sports gambling into their state, and it could be a big influx of cash. I mean, we talked about the up to, you know, $400 billion a year that's maybe bet illegally on sports at the moment in the United States, and we'll just have to kind of wait and see. So I want to thank you, Ryan, for coming on and talking with us about the illegal world of sports and where it's going and who stands to benefit, and sort of just kind of speculating on what the world could look like.
Well, we love a nice speculation, so it was nice to be on the show, and excited to keep my eyes on this story.
For sure, and that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines, and remember, if you have any questions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.